Hi, I'm Steve.
How's it? I'm Samon.
And welcome to the Business and Beers podcast. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Business and Beers. We're so excited, we're ready on episode 7. And today's guest, come to know each other through an awesome platform that he was working with last year, now become good mates and even business partners. I'd like to introduce you guys to Gideon Lankers.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. Yeah, we don't have beers this time. It's whiskey, so damn lockdown.
Upgrade.
Awesome, Gid. Thanks so much for joining us. So Gid, tell us a little bit about yourself. Let our listeners know who Gid is. And then, as we always do, we throw the curveball. Tell us one thing that not many people will know about Gideon.
One thing. Okay. So I think, basically I was always interested in sort of marketing, digital marketing. Wasn't sure, like when I was younger, how I'd actually make any money out of that. Because I think, I don't know about you guys, but growing up, parents were like accountant, lawyer, doctor. And I don't think that was in the cards for me. So yeah, I just followed my passion, studied at Vega, went the digital marketing route, decided that I thought it would be better to try and work for an entrepreneur directly as opposed to going to like a Unilever or a big organization where you'd sort of just fall, become one of the crowd. So I reached out to Manus from Shark Tank and I said, look, let me come create a podcast. Let me come and do some digital marketing, help you with your startup that you're building, and managed to get a meeting with him, managed to talk myself into an opportunity for 3 months at the beginning of last year, so 2019. And yeah, just from there, it sort of took off and that opened the door for what I'm doing now.
So you Shark Tanked the shark.
I Shark Tanked the shark, yeah. It's actually crazy because I remember being in 2016 watching Shark Tank and I was like, man, I want to become friends with these guys and what can I actually offer these guys in return to try and sort of get a job? So crazy.
Brilliant. And one random fact.
So, when I was a kid, I used to be obsessed with like birds of prey. Like I was obsessed. I had this book and I could tell you, but like that's a juvenile jackal buzzard,
yeah.
Or that's like a martial eagle. And I was a lighty. So I was like obsessed with him. So I like studied them inside out and I was part of this like nature conservation, wildlife sort of committee thing for like birds of prey when I was like 9, 10 years old.
That's actually crazy. When Gideon leaves, you should see if he's got I'm a bird watcher on the back of his car.
Yeah.
Do you have an eagle shirt?
Yeah, no, I grew out of it. Like,
Cool. So tell us, obviously, you obviously had the dream or you thought about working for an entrepreneur. How did you find that?
Yeah, so I just, I don't have really sort of any entrepreneurs in the family or anything. I just, it wasn't something that I thought would be real for myself until I sort of grew up and I got to age 21 and I started reading about entrepreneurship and I was like, hey, this could work because these guys are kind of like rebels. They are a bit creative. They go out there, they sort of challenge whatever the norm is. And there's a lot of financial upside. And to me, that was always like something that was attractive. And so I just thought, what better way than to sort of work under someone, learn from lessons directly that they've done, as opposed to studying like an MBA or going through a big company. And I just sort of watched Shark Tank and I thought, this is not a bad place to start. So,
yeah, I think the big thing that I want to touch on, and it's something that's been on my mind for such a long time, and it touches on this whole mentorship and obviously what you did, is now looking at the circle of people that you want to associate with. And it's something that I've posed to a lot of people because people put posts on it but no one can actually respond. But how do you go through that process of like, how did you identify Manus? Was it just that you watched the show and thought, okay, cool, this is a target? I mean, can you walk through that process? Because a lot of people that I see on LinkedIn, and especially in these uncertain times, are like freaking out and they need someone to help them, or they need this like a good group of people to guide them.
Yeah.
And it would actually be cool to hear how you did that.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that I did that I often chat to younger people as well, and that I see them missing out, is that they go to someone like a mentor and ask for help. And I think there's nothing wrong with that, but I think your chances of someone who's already established saying, yeah, sure, let me just stop what I'm doing and give my time to help you who I've never met, that your chances are low. But if you can look at your skills and say, look, I can build this, I can do this, and then you can find somebody who could be like a mentor type of figure and say, look, this would be a value add to them. This is what I can offer them. and then pitch that to them and say, look, let's give it a try. Let's try build your podcast. Let's try help with your ERP. Let's try do your paid media, whatever it is. Like, offer them value in a way that almost like the most selfish thing that they can do is to actually say yes.
Yeah.
So I think that might be like one of the ways that I approached Manas that helped.
And I mean, like, was he super responsive when you sent it, or was it like a bit of an uphill battle, you know, trying to get his attention?
So what I did is I sort of engaged with some of his stuff on Instagram, and then once I got a response from him, I knew that any message that I sent would go through. And so I filmed like a video, just like sitting at my table and just saying like, hi, what's up? My name is Gideon. I build podcasts and do videos. I see that you do this. This is how I can help you. I just sort of like show that you connect with what their vision is at the moment and be like, this is how I can help you. And so I made this video like over a weekend, and I sent it to him on a Sunday because I thought that's when he'd be chilling. He wouldn't be at the office or something. So yeah, I sent this like 1 minute video and he opened it like straight away and responded. And he's like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. And he's like, what's your story? And just chatted from there.
Great. Yeah, I think that's a big differentiator is you need to be unique, because a lot of the times, like, you kind of get stuck in this me bubble. Like, you got to realize there's 7 billion people in the world, and unfortunately people are super connected and busy. Like, you need to stand out, and if you're not willing to do that, you know, how can you expect extraordinary results?
Yeah, exactly. And so we had it also, like, after being at SME, having some of my friends from Nelspruit from school reaching out to me and saying, hey, I'm about to finish varsity, I'd love to come and work for you. And then they'll like go on a huge pitch about all their skills and their best qualities, and they leave out the part where they say like, this is what you guys are doing and this is how I can help you with what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's like such an easy thing and such an important thing to get right. It's just like, everybody thinks in terms of themselves. And so if you want to connect with someone, think in terms of them and speak in terms of them. Don't pitch your, I was in grade 3, I was the class captain. Or, you know, like, speak in terms of how you can help them.
I'm an eagle.
Yeah.
I think the thing, just what stood out for me in the way you approached Manas is you showed him the value you would add to him. You're not going to beg him to add value in your life.
Yeah.
And my only thoughts on mentors, I've tried to reach out a couple guys. I did exactly the example you used. I had someone, he was head of digital at NASPERS. He was like, I went to a couple of meetings, actually a client of mine, and I reached out to him and said, listen, hey, maybe I tackled it wrong, because I said to him, I aspire to be like you, please can you be my mentor? He replied and said, yes, sure, I am mentoring 10 other people, but let's organize. And I said, cool, no problem, let's set up the first coffee. The first coffee never happened. The thing is, so he offered to be my mentor, but it never went anywhere from there. And I think my only point to give on this is the mentor doesn't have to be the same gender, the exact same profession as you. My idea of a mentor would actually be someone that challenges you, even someone that you don't get along with. Because the thing is, there obviously has to be some sort of getting along aspect, but someone that really challenges you to be a better person. And it's not, they're not supposed to be like a psychologist that's going to counsel you through things. They need to be like, Gideon, why did you make that decision to buy more Bitcoin? Do you know what I mean? Whatever, it's a bad example. But they need to really just push you to be a better person. And that's my idea of a mentor. And I haven't really found someone, but there has been people along the way that I've been able to reach out to help. But yeah, I think it's difficult. And I like your way of doing it. And I'm definitely going to try that.
I think... I chatted with the Oak in the States the other day, like one of the top sellers that I followed, and he made such a cool point on this whole mentorship. And again, maybe that's where people miss it, is that you look at it as a mentor and say, great, this guy or girl or whoever is a be all and end all. I'm going to get a coffee with them. They're going to tell me which direction I need to go and life's going to be great. And he actually flipped it around and he said that you should actually look at mentoring as micro mentoring. And I was like, okay, this doesn't make sense. But then when you start looking at it, what he was saying is one mentor is not going to fulfill the whole journey that you need to take. Mm-hmm. Look at small areas that you're struggling with and find people that specialize, exactly like you're saying. You know, if I'm struggling, for example, in people skills, a salesperson might not be the best. It might be like an HR person and saying like, flip, I'm really battling, you know, understanding XYZ. Can you help me? And instead of looking, I mean, I don't know, what are your thoughts on actually like micro mentoring and looking at specific skills and then kind of developing it from there?
I think that's definitely a cool point. I think it's unrealistic to expect one person to sort of be flawless in every regard and to you know, that you can follow their mold exactly. And I think that goes against the idea of also just being your own person and figuring things out for yourself. But I think the idea of like breaking it down into smaller chunks and saying, wow, this of all my friends, this is the person who's like so connected, so social, they're just crushing it in that regard. Maybe spending a bit more time with them and asking them questions and learning about that. Yeah, yeah. Definitely think that's it's a great point. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks so much. I think that was great on how you chose to go and work for SME and Marnus in particular. Tell us a little bit about very briefly your journey there. Did you manage people? What just about your role at the company?
Yeah. So I actually started like, just almost like going back to the point we said about getting that opportunity is entrepreneurs think of risk, and most people who have done well in business are very good at understanding risk. And so when you want to get your foot in the door, try and think of how you can decrease the risk that they're taking on you as much as possible. And so if you are asking for a job opportunity and they have to sign you for like a 12-month contract and there's all kinds of things, that's much more risk for them. One thing I said to Marnus is I said, look, let's try it out for like 3 months. I won't take a salary. These are my living expenses. It was like 10 grand. If the company can cover these living expenses, I'll work flat out for like 3 months and let's see what happens. Don't need to sign a contract. If it doesn't work out, we'll go separate ways. If it works out, we'll talk about it there.
Make it like a no-brainer decision.
Exactly. So decrease the cost to company to them and decrease the risk. If he decides on a Tuesday, look, I'm over this, there's no obligations. So I think that's
risk for you there was high.
But you got to back yourself. Like you got to back yourself.
That's how you tackle the risk.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I literally just started as like a social media guy to like help. I was literally taking photos of like day-to-day stuff in the office.
Oh, wow.
And giving that to the actual social media lady who would then run all the strategy. That was it. On my first day, I added WhatsApp contacts manually. I added like 1,000 WhatsApp
Amazing.
Contacts.
Living the dream, man.
Yeah, as I made it, studied 3 years to add these contacts. But yeah, I really started at like the bottom and I think just being super interested and passionate about business, willing to learn, working side by side with the team and just sort of, there's that saying like you don't get given responsibility, you have to take it. And I think I just sort of did that and over the year I just got more and more responsibility and I think you asked about managing people. Yeah, I eventually was sort of managing most of the team there.
But I think that's like, it's a crazy thing. I think back to one of my jobs when I worked on the mines and I was like laying cables for cameras on a mine, like in an overall, and it was honestly a cuck job.
Yeah.
But one thing that the owner then was a family member and some of the most amazing lessons, but something that he taught me is it also goes on to a lot of respect piece. Because I see it so often now where people, specifically family businesses, daughter or a son gets put in the business, they don't start in the trenches, they don't understand what that hard work's like, and then at the end of the day they're getting like the massive paycheck and you sitting there and saying, well guys, I entered the WhatsApp contacts, I took the photos, yeah, I cleaned the coffee, I did everything. But I think when I start looking at the most successful people and you break it down, listen to every single person's story. Like very few people jumped in and started straight at the top. Most of the time they started right at the trenches, like right on the ground, built yourself up because you actually understand what it's like.
Yeah.
And then managing people is so much easier because you've got the respect piece. You know what that person's going through.
Yeah.
You know, I think about it a lot. Like a lot of people slate security guards, and there was a video this week that went viral where people said security guards actually helped where they were stealing a car and that security was running. But then my converse to the conversation is, imagine being that person. You're standing in the sun for 12 hours a day. You're earning minimal salary.
Yeah.
People treat you like cuck, but yet you smile and you must be friendly. And you think, like, imagine if you had to live like that. You'd hate life. Flip, man. My auntie asked me to take the trolley. I'd like bash it down the road.
Yeah. What do you think? So you said you were in the mines laying cables, but you obviously backed yourself when you knew that if you worked hard, you would get to like where you are now, which is insane. Like, did you always just sort of have that in your mind? Like, I'm doing this now, but this is going to lead to...
Yeah, so I think that goes back to our first episode where like I went through my journey and I don't know, I think it's blessings in disguise. But I mean, I've carried like the full scale of becoming, I was a plumber, then I was working in security, then I went to high-end medical devices, and now obviously high-end enterprise software, resource planning software. But I think the thing is exactly that. I've backed myself. I'm confident in who I am. I'm a very quick learner. But again, it's a willingness to grow. Like I think you need to humble yourself and not have an ego. Understand that sometimes you need to take two steps back to go five steps forward. And, you know, it's, I think it's a consistent learning piece that you've got to always be hungry to learn, always be hungry to face new challenges. Because I think it's, I've put myself in a position where I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable.
And I think it goes back to Git's point of we all associate risk with either fear or failure, right? But the thing is, if we can start associating risk with a cost factor, if we can associate or put a monetary value to risk, imagine you could do like there, your risk was, listen, they're going to cover my expenses, but I could also lose the job on Tuesday. But what's the cost factor of that, right? The cost factor could be, oh, your 10 grand salary could go to a 40 grand salary, right? So what's that risk cost? Oh, it could be a surplus of 30.
Yeah,
I could lose it, but then, oh, I'm only losing 10 grand, right?
Yeah.
And that goes back to your analogy, Sah, of if someone offers you a role tomorrow and you're like, well, flip, I'm actually losing a little bit of salary, but the risk, the cost of this risk could be that I could be the MD in 3 years. Then the cost becomes a surplus, right? And I think that's just important when looking at those risks. And it leads on to my next question perfectly, Gideon, is so now you're working there, you had some people to manage. So then what was the, are you still working there or what happened with Gideon?
Yeah. No. So we tried it for a year. So I think it launched sort of towards the end of 2018 and then launched officially 2019. And we pushed it super hard throughout the year.
Great events.
And then, yeah, thanks for coming. Popcorn. Appreciate it. Yeah. But yeah, and unfortunately things didn't work out. And I think that, obviously we sort of relied on Marnus to be like the pillar to build it all out. And I think for him, he saw different opportunities that he wanted to pursue. And I think it's common that entrepreneurs, we were talking about someone else, get there, get involved in too many different things. And when you do that, you actually don't do any of them exceptionally well. And I think that might've been the case with this company, is that there were a few things going on and it was actually time to sort of stand back a bit and say, look, what are the real opportunities? Where can we execute incredibly well? And then sort of go again this year. So yeah, unfortunately the company didn't sort of work out last year. And yeah, so now I'm sort of just running a digital marketing company now this year.
But I think that a big thing on that is the focus piece. I was listening to a really cool podcast today from an entrepreneur out in Australia. And he actually said that when you start focusing, and I think that's a big lesson that we can learn from entrepreneurs, and you know, huge respect to Marnus, because you guys actually built, we were talking about it earlier, PaaS, you know, platform as a service, where you're helping struggling small businesses, people that need help. And it's, I can imagine, I mean, there must have been sleepless nights and tough conversations to get to that point to say, like, guys, we're actually canning this whole thing. But again, sometimes you have to look at that focus piece. You know, do you focus on everything and lose everything? Or do you, you know, and it must have been a huge decision. I mean, can you talk us around that? And like, was it heavy conversations that you guys had to say, I'm actually focusing, so sorry guys, this was great, but cheers.
Yeah, it was very heavy conversations, that's for sure. I think, look, everything for that company, like you said, is PaaS. So it's a platform, it's a software product that we were trying to license and sell out to people, or we're trying to get people to join the product. But essentially, it was a tech product. And I think, I'm not sure if you've had experience with actually building tech, but it's really hard. That's why there's only a few Microsoft, Googles, because it is incredibly difficult. So I think... I think we sort of decided to shift away from actually building a platform and focus on what we were doing well, which was like the events and the marketing and the deals with like your corporates, Sassman, Investec, these kind of guys, MTN. And I think there was just a lot of uncertainty. The developers were let go, and then there was a big pivot, a lot of uncertainty. And I think there was going to be like a shift towards just being a marketing company that connects corporates with SMEs, and that sort of didn't carry enough legs to keep going this year. So, yeah.
In your opinion, if we had been in America and this PaaS platform was launched, do you think that the platform didn't take off because the markets weren't ready? Or like, what is your view on that?
I think that there is a market for it, but I think it's a long journey. So you have to be willing to commit 5 to 10 years to building an incredible product and going through all the growing pains. And I think that the team didn't have that long term view. It was more of like a, here's a great opportunity, let's build it into something valuable in 2 years. And as soon as you try and rush it like that, it's almost like you're trying too many different things at once and you don't focus on your core value that you're offering to people. Looking back, I think if we had really focused on like the one or two things on the platform that people actually used and we'd built around those and let the others go, and we'd focused on one or two of the events and the podcast and just focused on those and been willing to do it for a long time, I think people could go out there and build something successful, but just not in 2 years.
Yeah. I think the thing there is we always sometimes try and focus our goals into a certain timeline, right? And we have these massive goals, sometimes so ambitious. You're like, well, I want to build a $1 million company. And you're like, I want to do it in 2 years.
Yeah.
The thing is, what you should rather do is take that big, massive, ambitious goal and turn it into little small goals. Exactly like you said. If you said, well, listen, we want this sort of solution in our past to help. I still remember I was actually an SME member and I downloaded a template for a legal agreement or something, you know? So it could have been something like that. That's really cool. Let's quickly chat about now you, amazing news on entrepreneur. Give us one or two lessons that you, obviously you went to Marnus because he was on Shark Tank. What did you say were one of his two top lessons that you feel now, only now that you are an entrepreneur, were really beneficial to you?
Yeah, so I always think that word entrepreneur is a bit shady. I would say like I'm a business owner. It's just me. I've got one guy that I'm sort of training up. I would say like to be an entrepreneur, you need like a team that runs without you and you need systems in place and a legit product. And I would say that's entrepreneur level. I think I'm just like sort of budding business owner, self-employed, figuring it out. But two lessons. So, I mean, off the bat, Marnus is incredibly sharp. Yeah. Like his skills with finance is like off the charts. You know, people like that don't get there for no reason. Like he is really sharp with money. But I think the two lessons I picked up from that were in this day and age, like it doesn't make sense to build a business that's linear. For example, like a business where you need to land a few more clients and then hire up some more people to fulfill those contracts and then land a few more clients and goes on like that. And it's a linear growth company. It doesn't make sense to do that in today's day and age. Rather build like a product or something where, you know, you can offer it to 100 people and then to 1,000 and to 1 million people overnight. You can offer the same thing without having to hire like another, you know, 1,000 people.
Exponential growth.
Look for exponential growth opportunities. Just because it is the age of the internet and social media. So don't waste your time building something linear unless you are passionate about that. So that's one of the things. And I think the other thing that this is not something that he taught me, but it's something that I just learned from working with him, is just make decisions quickly.
Yeah.
Like he comes back from holiday and says, cool, we're going in this direction. We're doing this. We're letting this person go. We're hiring this person. We are signing this contract. We're ending that. Just quick decisions. And we've seen it with Warren as well. Like don't waste time. Don't feel bad. Don't, you know, drag things out. Just make decisions quickly and move. Just keep moving. So
that's like, it's so awesome. I was again reading a post this week on this whole decision making, and today's day and age, we're too connected. In my personal opinion, there's too much information available, and with too much information, you know, I've been considering purchasing like a Whoop fitness tracker. I cannot make a decision because there's so much information available, and maybe that's true to being a business owner, and people don't understand that because you're not in the trenches with that specific person. And again, just going back to like SME.Africa, the whole platform crashes. Now, you know, everything's gone in the mist and there's nothing really said about it. And everyone's like, oh, you know, says all this bad stuff. But people don't understand that you as a business owner need to make decisions. And the quicker you make decisions, the quicker you cut it off. And exactly like you say, what's the point of building a linear business? Mm. If there's no exponential growth and there's no compound interest, because if you take that related example back to someone, if you put your money in an investment and they say to you, great, you put 100,000 Rand in here, and in 10 years time, you're going to have 100,000 and 1 Rand. You're going to be like, you're smoking your socks.
Not really.
But then why do you apply that same logic to business? Because people do that in business. Your business is not growing. You're sitting on a stagnated pond, and you're kind of like, okay, I'm going to just keep flogging this dead horse. You don't do that with your money, so why do that with your business?
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good point as well. And also, Steve, maybe you can talk on this point, but the power of recurring revenue. I mean, that's something I'd never heard about. Yeah. Wasn't taught that in school, obviously. What are your thoughts on recurring revenue and how important that is if you can get it right?
Yeah, I think recurring revenue is super powerful, and it's just, for me, it goes down to one word, and it's just cash flow, right? It's easier for me to predict in a business what my cash flow is going to be when I'm not running on, in our game, it would be project-based. So you would, I would try sell a project next week, and then you try to predict your income. It gets very scary. COVID times, imagine, I would have had no income because I wouldn't have been able to sell any projects if I wasn't a project or whatever the case may be. So I would 100%, for me, that recurring revenue model is the most important. You sometimes decrease the cost you give the client, but you, at the end of the day, when you look at your cost of the risk, you make more, because the thing is, you then have a guaranteed, again, I'm in the same boat as you. I'll never sign a client in for a 12-month or 24-month contract. I'd say to him, listen, give us a 3-month trial at this, and then we'll go. I still remember one of my first clients, it was a 1-month trial, and now we're 14 months in, and the 1-month trial still keeps going. But it's exactly that. The main thing for me is just cash flow, and to know that you're getting that money every single month, and because you don't want it to go up and down too much. Yes, I do have really good months. I do, we sell massive, like a website or something, and that's really good. But then for me, I see that as a bonus or an incentive. And then what I do, it goes back to the other podcast we involved in financial, but is then save that, put it in the kitty. Listen, that was a good month, and then you keep it. But that recurring revenue every month allows me to see where income is, and then most importantly, where my expenses sit. So yeah. So Gideon, tell us a little bit about, now you're a business owner, you obviously went from managing a team to now managing yourself. Must have been super difficult in lockdown, as point number one, because you're trying to run a business, you're at home, stuck in your own thoughts, stuck in your own decisions, because you're now trying to run a business. Speak to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I didn't really have a choice, if I'm being honest. You know, I'd registered this company last year while I was working at SME, just sort of for tax purposes, more efficient. And so I had this company, and I'd built a few relationships in the industry just from working with people and people that had come on Manas's podcast. And so I thought, hey, like, I've got this rent that I need to cover. I've got a few expenses. What can I do? Like, what can I actually offer people to just at least, like, I didn't think build an empire or build a huge company. I just thought actually pay rent for the first 3 months, whatever it is. Yeah. And so I started reaching out to people saying like, hey, I know you do this. We can offer that. And making packages and saying you can take package A, B, or C, price them differently. Yeah. Just really pushing it out there and testing it. So I landed a few podcast clients who asked me to produce podcasts for them on a monthly retainer, recurring revenue, which was awesome. I had a few digital marketing jobs, like running campaigns for one of the banks here. I had one or two projects with Manas that had carried on that he wanted me to close the loop there. So that was a source of income. And I sort of pulled these things together and got through the first 3 months, got through lockdown, and I was enjoying it. It was cool. And the funniest thing is, like, of everything that I thought that I would be doing, I didn't think that I would be producing podcasts for people. It just felt like such a small thing, not in high demand, no high barriers to entry. Any kid can learn how to edit podcasts. Yeah. But that was the most stable thing that I'd done out of everything. It wasn't the digital marketing. It wasn't the project management. It wasn't the paid media. It was just producing podcasts for people on a monthly basis. These guys were keen. They were paying me every single month. They were referring new clients to me without having to push sales. And so that's kind of what I decided to focus on.
But that's powerful. Like, a lot of people look at tough situations and they go, woe is me, life sucks, and you know, everything's down. But your most difficult times are going to make you, we said it earlier, quick decisions.
Yeah.
And sometimes in your difficult times, you actually don't have anything else objecting that decision. The decision's so clear. If I don't do this, I don't eat at the end of the month.
I
personally believe some people need to have that decision. I personally believe some people physically need to lose their job, because you'll actually get a cracker going and you'll do the thing that you need to do, because people are too comfortable. I mean, if I look at your environment, you've got one of South Africa's top entrepreneurs. He's inspirational, got a ton of businesses. I mean, that oak's literally got like the key to any single person in South Africa. If you had to say to him, Manas, I want to meet Albie from USN, he goes, great, when do you want to meet him? I'm going for a bra.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And to go from that now to kind of say like, shit, what am I going to eat, you know, at the end of the month, at like, it's incredible.
No, yeah, it's I love what you said there. Like, some people should do it, because there's that saying, like, burn the ships, right? You guys, yeah. I'm sure you guys have heard that, right? And I learned this for the first time when I was studying in Durban, and I was seeing a girl, and she was like incredibly driven, and she was like the first girl that I met that was like super hardworking, and I was just really like interested in that. And her father had passed away like the year before I met her. Oh. And they were like super, super, super well off. They were like one of the top families in Durban.
Yeah.
And unfortunately he had passed away, and there'd been a few legal battles, and they sort of started from scratch.
Wow.
And so you can imagine the journey that her and her mom went through. Her mom hadn't worked for like 25 years, didn't have a degree. She had sort of grown up not having to work, and all of a sudden now she's having to do promos and hustle work. Her mom had to go and sort of get a job. And I sort of watched that process of them rebuild from nothing. And they would say to me, like, we didn't think that it would be possible for us to do what we're doing now.
Yes.
Like, we didn't know we could be these people until we were in this position where we had no choice.
Yes.
And I got to see that and feed off that energy. And I was like, this is really powerful. And you need to, as much as you can, put yourself in situations where it is kind of like life or death, you know, billions of body bags, whatever it is, because you become a person that you wouldn't become if you weren't forced to do that.
That's like testament to South Africans, because you hear this thing, the big talk now with a lot of people is immigration. Like, I know we're jumping like a spider web.
Everyone's talking about it, yeah.
But you hear all these comments of South Africans go work overseas, and I've never heard of any stories where people say South Africans are not hardworking. But
true.
It's testament to that is that we are consistently faced with battles. One person is fulfilling five roles in a company, and it's not overlooked. It's common. And you've got a government which is failing. You've got corruption. You've got literally every element in a first world country that wouldn't be fighting you, fighting you. Yeah. So like when you go over there, it's like, flip, this is amazing. It's like stealing candy from a baby because like next to you, he knows he's like 5 + 5 = 10.
Yeah.
Like South Africans, you're like, well, 5 + 5 = 10, but it could be 12 and 3 and 1.
Yeah.
And if you subtract the zero, you know.
Yeah, it's the two, the two that goes to your body.
Yeah, mind you, it's 5 + 5 is 7,000.
What about you, Steve? Because I know that, okay, so I mean, for those of you not listening, you haven't been following the show, Steve's, you know, married to a financial planner. So you had like a much more planned, calculated route into entrepreneurship. Did you find yourself in that situation where it was thrive or die, or were you more sort of calculated and cruise through?
So we were fortunate enough, and as Keith said in the first episode or second episode, I let everyone know that we had 6 months worth of my reduced salary. So I'd reduced my salary by more than half from my previous job to say, listen, this is, we calculated every expense, and then we said, okay, Steve can live off this for 6 months. And then the thing is, I always loved the idea of being a business owner, as you mentioned, not necessarily an entrepreneur, but I always loved the idea. I studied business in school, and I loved the idea of it. So I was so excited when it happened. And I still remember on the first day, which was the 1st of September last year, I said to myself, Steve, the only objective that you need to ensure you fulfill every single month in this business is to make a profit. So you always need to make more income than your expenses. So I always... thanks to my wife, there's Excel sheets that have expenses listed, that have the income listed all the time. And yes, I would say it was always ride or die for me, because that 6 months is still sitting there. I never ended up touching that money at all. So the business paid me a salary from day one and more. So I would say it was ride or die for me, but from a mental perspective, not necessarily if we could call it a physical. Because Gideon, I remember us chatting in January this year. And you still said, like, Steve, I don't even care if I need to sleep in my car. I'm going to sleep in my car because I want to do this and I want to start my own business. So it wasn't necessarily like that for me, but in my mind, I was like, there is no ways I'm going to not let this thing work. So, that I think for me was the big driving factor, and it wasn't necessarily physical, but mental.
Yeah.
I said, I need to make this work. And then the other thing from there to touch on that is, people said I couldn't do it. I had at my previous company, we had two directors. One is very supportive and one not so supportive. And you could just see, he said to me, it's not going to work. And I said, bro, I'll prove you wrong. And I think
that's
that was still to this day what drove me the most, because I'm like, and I still even think now, he still thinks that it won't work. But for me, that's the biggest driving factor. If someone says to me, you can't make it happen, I'll do everything in my power to make sure it happens. So
yeah,
for me, that was just two of the factors that were my ride or die.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so could you tell us a little bit about now, how's things looking in your business, and just any current challenges that you're facing that you feel could be good lessons for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we have time to go through all the challenges. This is a long list. But yeah, really just interested in podcasts and interested, I mean, podcast is the channel, but high level, it's advertising and integrating people's products into content that gives them value and trying to find the right audiences and sell to them. And yeah, so I've got this company called Disrupt, and we have sort of two businesses within that. One of them is a service that we offer to people. We produce podcasts. We're like a virtual publishing house for sort of leaders and brands who want to make an impact. We will help them get the message out there. They work with us on a monthly retainer, super affordable, best quality out there. And the other business is Honest Money. I don't know if you want to chat about that. That's super exciting to me. And that's when we actually take on the risk ourselves. We build up a show, we build up an audience, and then we partner with bigger brands who have products and services that make sense to the audience of those shows. And we start to partner with those brands. So. Yeah.
Awesome. I think, guys, if you guys are keen, we're going to have an episode 2 with Gideon, and we're going to discuss a little bit more about Disrupt. I think he's got a really cool business, and how to start your own podcast if you're keen. So thanks so much, Gideon. We really appreciate you being on the show. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks so much for sharing openly and honestly with us about your journey so far. And yeah, we'll catch you on the next episode.
Before you go, if people want to reach you, like, what's your socials, your deets?
Yeah.
I mean, slide in your DMs.
Yeah, I don't really have anything. I mean, it's Twitter, Gideon Lankers, LinkedIn. Just cool. Follow Honest Money.
Good man.
Follow Honest Money. No, thank you, guys. Thank you.
Cool. Cheers.